is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga, and here's what's coming up.
UNICEF's calling for $30 million in support to enable us to respond to this cyclone and to the cholera outbreak. But I mean, it's very challenging and we're very overstretched.
That's Guy Taylor, Chief Advocacy, Communications and Partnerships for UNICEF in Mozambique on the challenges caused by Cyclone Freddy. Also, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announces a new humanitarian assistance for Ethiopia. A second day of protests is planned today against Senegalese President Macky Sall, and a military court in Somalia has ordered the execution of three Al-Shabaab militants. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is wrapping up a visit to Ethiopia today. To give us an overview of the trip, I'm joined by my colleague Salem Solomon here in studio. Hi, Salem.
Hello there. Thank you for
having me.
Welcome
to the show.
Now,
Salem, what is the significance of this trip by Secretary Blinken to Addis Ababa?
Right. So this trip is part of an effort to deepen U.S. engagement with the continent. And so this is the first leg of his two-country visit to the continent. It's also the first high-level U.S. delegation going to Ethiopia as the country is emerging from a two-year brutal civil war in the northern part of the country, more specifically the Tigray region. U.S.-Ethiopia relations have been strained in the past 2 years due to the war that has, by some accounts, an estimated 500,000 civilians have been dead due to violence, starvation, lack of medication or medical attention, and thousands more displaced. But this trip is also important to Ethiopia because the U.S., the United States, is the largest single country provider of humanitarian assistance in Ethiopia, and the U.S. is the largest bilateral aid contributor to the country, averaging more than $1 billion in assistance per year since 2007. So it is important for both countries.
I see. From what you gather, what reception did the Blinken get in Ethiopia, and what did the Ethiopians hope to get from this trip?
That's a very important question. Thank you so much for that. We've seen videos of Blinken drinking traditional coffee in Ethiopia. And so, you know, on the service level, it's very positive, you know, building or renewing, revisiting relations. But Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed is hoping to secure some sort of economic aid and a pledge of what advocates are calling, you know, normalizing relations with the U.S. because of the past war, and also, you know, there's a peace process taking hold now in the northern part of the country. But it's not only in the northern part of the country that, you know, a lot of violence is happening, conflict. You know, they discussed other parts of the country, the Oromia region, Tigray region, all these places. And also justice and reconciliation is part of it. Another part is that Ethiopia is part of the African Growth and Opportunity or AGOA Act, which is a U.S. effort passed in 2000 to aid development in sub-Saharan African countries. Ethiopia gets access to free duty access to U.S. markets. And if you've seen, you know, tags that read made in Ethiopia and it's part of that. And so last year in January, because of the war and because what the U.S. says due to gross violations of human rights, U.S. withdrew Ethiopia's access to AGOA. And so some Ethiopian government officials are hoping to restart that.
I see. Where is he, Secretary Blinken, going next, and what is the significance of that trip?
Well, next, the Secretary is heading to Niger, West African country. The significance of that trip is because Niger is an important partner in an increasingly unstable region, Sahel region, and is surrounded by countries that have already undergone coups and counter-coups where the military or soldiers are grabbing power at the point of a gun. So extremist violence is spiking in that region, particularly in the area where Niger and Burkina Faso and Mali border each other. So Niger has been a long-time partner in the fight against terrorism in the region and the Sahel at large. And so the U.S. is, you know, has constructed two air bases there. It has extensive training relationships with military-to-military relationship in the country and has gifted lifted equipment like, you know, C-130 aircraft. Mm. So when Blinken is headed to Niger on March 16th, he will become the first U.S. Secretary of State to visit the country. He plans to meet the president and the foreign ministers to talk and expand conversations about counterterrorism in the region.
Thank you. That's VOA editor Salem Solomon. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
The UN Children Agency, UNICEF, says it's stepping up efforts to assist thousands of families left homeless after Tropical Cyclone Freddy slammed Mozambique again. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports for VOA.
As floods forced families from their homes in Mozambique and spread dangerous diseases, UNICEF is on the ground scaling up life-saving supplies. Speaking to VOA Wednesday, Guy Taylor, Chief of Advocacy, Communications and Partnerships for UNICEF in Mozambique, said the situation there remains challenging. He appealed for support from the donor community.
UNICEF is calling for $30 million in support to enable us to respond to this cyclone and to the cholera outbreak. But, I mean, it is very challenging and we're very overstretched. Work is underway, though, and we are on the ground. UNICEF had pre-positioned large quantities of supplies in advance of the cyclone. We obviously knew it was coming, so that we're able to mobilize those quickly to children and families in need, things like water purification supplies, water storage, all the basics, hygiene kits.
He said UNICEF is providing emergency assistance to children and their families and that teams are assessing immediate needs while rapidly distributing critical supplies, including safe water, medical supplies, tents and hygiene kits.
In rural areas, the destruction was perhaps even worse. Many people's homes completely destroyed. Many people living in houses and structures made of sticks, mud, branches, things like that, which are obviously not able to withstand the kind of winds we saw. And then flooding, the rain which came before Freddy and also after Freddy has caused very widespread flooding.
Taylor said the storm's impact was massive and essential services such as water, electricity and telecommunications had been damaged, hindering aid operations.
The other big concern that we have as UNICEF is around waterborne disease. So Mozambique has been facing a cholera outbreak since September 2022, around 8,700 cases now, around 1,000 new cases a week at the moment. And cholera is obviously a waterborne disease, so that's going to be made much worse by the flooding. Also, things like diarrhea, you know, one of the biggest killers of babies and children under five, and when you don't have access to clean running water.
Freddy has also devastated neighboring Malawi, where heavy rains and strong winds have led to landslides, damaging houses and infrastructure. Malawi is also battling a cholera outbreak.
The humanitarian community in Mozambique is overstretched. We're responding to multiple competing humanitarian crises. We have the cholera outbreak. We have polio, which we're supporting a vaccination campaign for. This is a country with 2 million people in need of humanitarian support in the north of the country. So this just compounds the situation and makes it very hard to respond.
The World Meteorological Organization says Cyclone Freddy is one of the longest-lasting tropical weather systems recorded in the Southern Hemisphere. According to the UN, climate change has increased global temperatures, causing extreme weather events in the southeastern coast of Africa. In 2022, storms and cyclones caused destruction in central Mozambique, while southern provinces suffered from drought conditions. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Weather experts have warned that cyclone seasons in Africa are going to intensify in the near future, and many blame climate change. Cyclone Freddy has lashed large swaths of southern Africa in recent weeks and is said to become the longest-lasting storm on record after first forming near Australia almost 40 days ago. Extreme weather, including floods and heavy winds, have left death and destruction in its path, and many thousands are homeless in Mozambique, Malawi, and Madagascar. Darren Taylor reports.
University of Johannesburg sociologist Pat Bond studies the impact of climate change on African communities. He says Cyclone Freddy has been remarkable because of its severity and duration. He says Freddy could be just the start of a future filled with powerful storms, even during seasons when they usually don't happen.
We should be very concerned. The gusts, that is the peak strength of this cyclone, have already hit 270 as it hit Madagascar. It's gone through and it's picked up more steam in a fairly hot Mozambique channel.
As Freddy tore across southern Africa for the second time in a month, floods swept homes away in Malawi, with about 200 people already confirmed dead. Aid agencies are now preparing for serious disease outbreaks. Bond says Mozambique in particular is being battered. He says much of Africa simply isn't prepared for extreme weather events.
With those storms dropping up to 400 milliliters, we're just hoping stormwater drainage systems and people's own ability to avoid flooded rivers and floodplains will save lives.
Bond says climate change has doubled the threat posed by cyclones and tropical storms in Africa.
So the rain bombs in April and May of 2022 that devastated KwaZulu-Natal, especially Durban, with about 500 dead, included, I think it was 351 millimeters on the worst day. Now, if we're getting up in that period of 2 or 3 days to 400, we just don't have the adaptation, the climate proofing in our cities, in our countryside, then we're going to see the especially vulnerable people in villages and townships and shack settlements subject to what happened last year. And what unfortunately we didn't learn was to make more of a resilience.
Bond says richer countries are going to have to live up to commitments and give money to Africa so it can build tougher infrastructure and proper drainage systems.
That's what the West has very strongly resisted. I must say, along with the BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, you put these five countries meeting in Durban in August together with the West, and we still haven't had a breakthrough in really making money available to clean up these kinds of messes. And in fact, tragically, we're investing in the opposite. We put 1,200 troops into northern Mozambique to help Total, ExxonMobil, Eni from Italy, China National Petroleum get gas from the fourth largest methane field in the world. It's a terrible set of contradictions, and we have to approach these much more forthrightly than we have to date.
Bond says some African governments cannot blame only richer countries for the climate change that's sparking extreme weather events. He says they must change their own priorities. Otherwise, storms in the future will make Freddy look mild in terms of death tolls and scale of destruction. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Opposition supporters in Senegal organized a second day of protests today against what they say are dictatorial practices by President Macky Sall, which his government denies. They also accuse Sall's government of arbitrary arrests and oppose his seeking an unconstitutional third term in next year's elections. More than 10,000 people hit the streets of Senegal's capital on Tuesday for the first day of protest, as Anika Hammarslag reports from Dakar.
Opposition supporters, adorned in Senegal flag-themed regalia, streamed onto a field late Tuesday afternoon, chanting, "Macky Sall is a dictator." Many wore T-shirts with messages of support for who they hope will be Senegal's next president, opposition leader Ousmane Sonko. Sonko is facing libel charges in court Thursday for allegedly accusing the Minister of Tourism of embezzlement. He's also facing separate charges for rape, which his supporters say were trumped up to stop him running again. Sonko's arrest a year ago ignited a week of rioting that led to the deaths of 14 people. 36-year-old Dabouche Niane was one of few female protesters at Tuesday's rally. She says, "We're very tired of Macky Sall and want him to leave, no matter the price." "The Senegalese people are tired," Niane says, "tired of suffering, of poverty, of unemployment." She says the economy is not working and all we have are problems. 22-year-old protester Abdu'l-Baha Mbodji says he was mostly satisfied with Macky Sall's time in office, especially with his investments in infrastructure. But he says that's not the point. Mbodji says it's not about whether we like Macky Sall. He says what bothers us is the fact that he wants to force a third term. That's the only issue. President Sall has not yet said if he'll run for a third term in next year's election, which would go against the two-term limit set in Senegal's constitution. Sonko came in third in the 2019 presidential election and has since grown in popularity, mainly among Senegalese youth. Senegal's government denies persecuting the opposition or moving away from democracy. But protests have erupted at times throughout the country over the last year after government crackdowns on protests and arrests of opposition leaders. Samir Daoud is the regional director for Amnesty International's West and Central Africa office.
What we are seeing in Senegal is an increasing restriction and reduction of the civic space. Senegal used to be seen as a model for democracy and freedom, so this authoritarian drift we are seeing is, of course, raising serious concerns.
West Africa has suffered a string of coups in the last few years, and instability in Senegal, long considered the region's most solid democracy, could ripple beyond its borders. Tensions are only expected to grow as the country gets closer to the presidential election, less than a year from now, in February 2024. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
A military court in Somalia has ordered the executions of three Al-Shabaab militants it said pretended to be a doctor and soldiers to carry out bombings and shootings. Ahmed Mohamed reports from Mogadishu, Somalia.
The military appeals court in Mogadishu ordered the executions carried out Wednesday of three men it said were Al-Shabaab militants who disguised themselves to carry out deadly attacks in the city. The court said 38-year-old Mohamed Abdinur Jiro used fake names and titles, including calling himself Dr. Fana and claiming to be a neurologist. Authorities say in 2021, he bombed two restaurants in Mogadishu, killing 20 people. The court said Jiro also killed two people in an attack on a football stadium on the outskirts of Mogadishu, though it didn't say when, and helped with a suicide bombing in February that killed one soldier. Mumin Hussein Abdullahi is the deputy prosecutor at the military court. He says today they executed the convicts, Mohamed Abdinur Jiro, also known as Dr. Fana, Mohamed Abdullah Abko, known as Bimalo, and Sharif Mohamed Barkanle Ayanle, also known as Jego. The court said 36-year-old Bimalo pretended to be a military lieutenant and bombed a restaurant in Mogadishu in 2019, killing 11 people. The court said Bimalo also helped Al-Shabaab militants attack in Mogadishu's international airport 1 year ago, killing one soldier. The court said 53-year-old Ayale had actually served in Somalia's army but claimed to be a captain, which the military denies. The court says Ayale bombed Mogadishu Mall in February, killing 16 people and injuring 38. The appeals court was upholding a January lower court death sentence for the three after they were said to have confessed. The executions came 1 week after a military court in Somalia's Puntland region ordered the executions of 13 Al-Shabaab and Islamic State militants. The court also ordered the execution of 5 Somali soldiers for killing civilians. Ahmed Mohamed for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
It's a week since Zimbabwe opened its tobacco auction floors, widely known as the Golden Leaf. Tobacco remains one of the country's top foreign currency earners, contributing just below $1 billion in export earnings every year. Reporter Kuzai Vinavashi in Harare has more details.
Tobacco Industry Marketing Board Chairman Patrick Devenish says the demand for the crop is promising.
Well, the market started firm today, but the first day will never tell you a story. But we expect prices to be good. There's still a little bit of a global shortage, and there's always demand for the Zimbabwean crop.
Tobacco farmers have often cried foul over late payments by contractors. Some are still owed about $100 million from the previous season. Devenish says this season they will suspend licenses of contractors who delay payments. Dennis Gerrera is a tobacco farmer in the Headlands area, a top growing region in the eastern province of Manicaland. He says, I brought 4 bales to the auction floors
Judging from the prices I have seen here and with the tobacco I have back home, this year has better prospects. The challenges we encountered during the farming season is that the fertilizer prices were exorbitant, similar with the labor costs to tend to the tobacco. Devanish links the fertilizer prices to global geopolitics.
Sadly, it affected us quite badly because the Ukraine war happened at the time that we were planting our crop. So we did pay more than we should have, but that price didn't stay up for long. Prices have settled back to more or less where they were.
Gerera says, despite the good prices, he hopes for a slight increase that will cover the high cost of fertilizers and labor costs this past season. Now, the trading begins once more. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zwinawashe from Harare.
A Paris court has found two French journalists guilty of extortion and blackmail against the King of Morocco. According to Radio France International, Eric Leroy and Catherine Grachet sought to extort several million euros from King Mohammed VI in 2015 in exchange for not publishing an embarrassing book on the Morocco royal family. The court sentenced them to 12 months in prison with a fine of about $10,000. Laura, a former correspondent for Radio France and Le Figaro magazine, in 2012 wrote a book on the monarch called The Predator King, which was banned in Morocco. The pair contacted the king's office and accepted $84,000 in an agreement not to write anything more on the country. They later sent a document to a Moroccan lawyer asking for over $1 million in return for not publishing the book. In court, Laura, 75, admitted to moral error, but denied committing a criminal offense. Grasset, who is 48, admitted she had been seduced by Morocco's financial offer. The two journalists intend to appeal their sentence. Meanwhile, Season 3 of the Basketball Africa League is well underway in Dakar, Senegal. Here is VOA's Jackson Mvunganyi with a recap of yesterday's action.
After both teams lost in their first games this season, Nigeria's Kwara Falcons and Mali's Stade Malien went head-to-head on Tuesday, but it was Mali that took this one. A dramatic ending as the Falcons end up cutting Mali's lead to 4 with only about 3 seconds. Nigeria's Jawad Adekoya has the ball, but it's turned over and Mali wins 78-74. For the second game, Abidjan's ABC Fighters went up against Rwanda's Energy Group, both of whom won their first games, but Rwanda came out on top in this battle. Rwanda is up by 8 points with under 3 minutes left in the game when Abidjan's Faman Kone finds Stefan Konate, who makes a much-needed three. One last try for Abidjan as Kone gets the ball to Fofana, but misses, and Rwanda wins their second game of the tournament, 80-73.
That was my colleague Jackson Mvunganyi giving us a look at Tuesday's ball games. Today, U.S. Monastra takes on Nigeria's Kwara Falcons and Rwanda's Reg battles Stade Malien of Mali. For all the latest on ball action, tune in into the Sunny Side of Sports and find the Sunny Side of Sports on Twitter and Facebook. Don't forget to catch Nothing But Net with Mokbill and Sunny, our weekly ball podcast featuring Mokbill Yaboro and Sunny Young. You can find it and all the updates on ball action on VOA Africa. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbill Yeboro, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, I thank you for choosing the Voice of America.